You're listening to the Casting for Fun podcast, the show that talks about entertainment, sports, music, and inspirational stories for all to enjoy. We're glad that you could join us today. Please sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Now, here is your host, Albert Pineda.
Welcome to a special week of the Casting for Fun podcast. I am your host, Albert Pineda, coming to you, if things go according to plan, on three different days this week. First time ever on the podcast that I'm doing this. So this episode should be coming out to you on Monday, November 17th. But then also, if things go according to plan, we'll have an episode on Wednesday, November 19th, our regularly scheduled day, and Friday, November 21st. Again, there's so many topics that I want to cover. And, you know, last week I missed the week, so I want to just keep going with podcasting. I'm getting really, really close to episode 200. So that's kind of the main reason why I'm like pushing forward to record these episodes. For episode 200, I don't have anything major planned like I did last time when I hit 100. But there is a specific episode I have in mind for episode 200 and a specific guest. So stay tuned for that. That should be coming out very soon. But anyways, for this week, we're going to be discussing three awesome movies that have very little in common, but I think this should be a really great, fun conversation for these three. First up is GoldenEye, and then later on Wednesday will be Rocky IV, and then on Friday, tentatively, if things go according to plan, it will be the Ewok adventure, The Battle for Endor. So let's dive into some GoldenEye talk. It will just be me today, but before we get into GoldenEye talk, I'm going to go ahead and talk about some news stories that are of interest to me that I think will also be of interest to many of my listeners. I'm assuming we share much in common. So a lot of these things that I talk about are things that you guys would enjoy as well. And then also, I do want to put in a timestamp because it's just me. The GoldenEye conversation might be a little on the shorter end. So I'll put in a timestamp in case people want to skip ahead directly to GoldenEye. But let's talk some sports. Shohei Ohtani wins his fourth MLB National League MVP award. Very exciting, very well deserved. The only player to win all of his MVP awards unanimously. I mean, it's a no-brainer that he should be winning these awards. Third in a row, fourth overall, two with the Angels and now two with the Dodgers, along with two World Series championships, which he was never going to win in Anaheim. The only other MLB player to win more MVP awards is Barry Bonds. And in just for the sake of finding out the information, because information is so readily available to us now, I wanted to see how MVP awards look for other professional sports in North America. So it's crazy and awesome to think that the record for the most MVP awards goes to Wayne Gretzky for the NHL, winning 9. I mean, Wayne Gretzky dominated the 80s in the NHL, so that was really cool for him. For the NBA, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has 6. He leads the NBA with MVP awards. Peyton Manning leads the NFL with 5. And then, of course, just for completionists, for those who care, I mean, I had to dig a little deeper to find this stat because most sports reporting sites on the internet don't really cover Major League Soccer, but I wanted to cover Major League Soccer because I'm a fan. Preki, one of the MLS originals, and Leo Messi are tied with 2 MLS MVP awards. Or technically, MLS hasn't officially announced the 2025 MLS MVP winner yet, but it's widely speculated that Messi's going to win his second in a row. And with all due respect to Mr. Preki, I mean, don't get too used to being tied with Messi, because my guess is Messi is going to win more MVP awards before his career is over. He recently signed a contract extension with Inter Miami. So yeah, he's going to be around MLS for at least another year or two. And speaking of MLS, I mean, I want to dive into some MLS news too. MLS officially announced the change of their regular season schedule to align with European leagues, and that's actually huge. So starting in 2027, the season's going to go from August, beginning in August, till May. So I'm assuming actually it would go, preseason July, August would be the regular season beginning. There's going to be a winter break for this, the beginning like in like the week before Christmas in December, going till about like the second week in February, so probably right after the Super Bowl, and then all the way up till April, and then May would be the month of playoffs for MLS. So really, really excited to see this news. I mean, a lot of European soccer fans have been clamoring for this to happen. And, you know, for the longest time, Major League Soccer, I think, did it this way to avoid competing with major sports leagues that go in the fall. Like, you know, you have NFL, NBA, NHL going on. And then, you know, we had Major League Baseball going on in the summer. So it's not as much competition, I think. Plus, you go into the fact that a lot of the MLS teams play in adverse weather conditions during the winter season, so it would be beneficial to not play that time, especially because a lot of the stadiums or arenas or smaller stadiums for Major League Soccer teams don't have the dome, the roof, so they kind of have to play in adverse weather conditions. Well, anyways, I want to share an audio clip. This is Landon Donovan talking about the news when he heard about MLS changing the regular season schedule. So let's go ahead and dive into this.
Hey guys, here on the golf course. Just saw the news from MLS and Commissioner Garber about the schedule change, the calendar change. I love it. I love it for MLS. I love now that we will be on the same schedule with the rest of the world. I was hopeful they'd be able to do it right after the World Cup, but I know there's a lot of nuance and challenges that go into that. So exciting news for the league, exciting for MLS. I think fans are going to love it. It's going to be fun to see the new changes.
So I'm inclined to agree with Donovan. I think the change is really great. But what I would say is, I mean, again, I mentioned it before here on the podcast that during the dog days of summer, sometimes it can be kind of boring for non-entertainment stuff. You know, going like, you know, July into August. So it was, you know, a breath of fresh air to have both MLB and MLS going on at the same time for our entertainment value. But no, I think this will be a good change. In fact, I mean, technically MLS preseason will be beginning in July. So, and then the season starting in August. So the reality is that it's a very small stretch of like not having soccer going on during the summer. So I don't think it's going to be too big of a deal as far as like the dog days of summer are concerned. One other bit of MLS news that I wanted to share. This is really exciting too. So I covered this story 3 years ago when Apple TV announced that they were partnering with MLS to broadcast their games and that there would be an additional charge to pay. What MLS announced is that they're going to be including the MLS Direct Kick, all the games on Apple TV at no additional charge, along with just paying for your Apple TV subscription, which is so awesome, so great. So, yeah, I mean, I wish other sports leagues would do it. I mean, I mentioned it before that sometimes it's frustrating to not be able to get Laker games or Dodger games unless you sign up for Spectrum, which kind of sucks. But there'll never be a blackout day for Galaxy games or any other MLS team. If you pay for Apple TV at no additional charge, you're going to get every single MLS game from here on out, starting next year in 2026. So yeah, this is awesome news for Major League Soccer. Does it behoove Apple to do this? I mean, it may not, but I mean, they're doing it. So there you go. But yeah, really excited for Major League Soccer to return next year and for the changing of the schedule shift from August to May, from going here on out in 2027. So yeah, very exciting for sports talk. Very, really cool stuff going on in the world of sports. And now let's dive into some music talk now. And so the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame took place a few weeks ago, and Soundgarden was one of the many inductees for this year, along with like Cyndi Lauper, The White Stripes, Outkast. Do you know like Outkast? I don't think they're that good. I mean, I know one song. Yeah, the Hey Ya, which is not even really that good of a song. But anyways, yeah, so it was a really memorable night for the surviving members of Soundgarden. Soundgarden was inducted by Jim Carrey into the Hall of Fame, which is kind of unique and cool.
We make sure that Chris Cornell, Kim Thiel, Hiro Yamamoto, Matt Cameron, and Ben Shepherd go down in history as one of the most majestic, powerful, and influential bands ever to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Long live Chris Cornell and long live Soundgarden.
Apparently, I didn't know this before, but Jim Carrey was a fan of Chris Cornell and the guys from Soundgarden. There was a picture circulating the internet of Jim Carrey posing with the guys from Soundgarden dating back to 1996, so around the time that they released their Down on the Upside album. So I guess he was a good fit to be the individual to induct them into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And lots of really cool performances were done by the surviving members of the band, including Toni Cornell, Chris Cornell's daughter, who does a really great version of Fell on Black Days. And Brandi Carlile teaming up with Taylor Momsen to perform Black Hole Sun. And in case you don't know who Taylor Momsen is, she plays Cindy Lou. She was the little girl Cindy Lou in the How the Grinch Stole Christmas. And I guess she's a singer, like, you know, a rock singer. So she does her own performances like that. I guess loves the band. And it was cool because I also saw backstage pictures on circling the internet with Jim Carrey and Taylor Momsen being reunited. I guess they hadn't seen each other since the Grinch movie came out 25 years ago. So that was kind of cool to see that. And then by all accounts, it was an amazing, great night of rock music, honoring Soundgarden, one of my all-time favorite bands. I mean, more than deserving induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So you can definitely check that out on YouTube. I think you can even catch it on Disney Plus. Did it air on Disney Plus? But yeah, you can catch these clips that I just inserted into the podcast that you just heard now on YouTube. So be sure to do that if you're a fan of Soundgarden. And a little bit more music news. There's some new music from G Love and Special Sauce. They have a new album called Ode to RRL, and with a new song that I really did called Bring Me Your Love. And a special shout out to my wife, Allison, whose favorite country singer, one of her favorite country singers, Kelsey Ballerini, just released an EP of new music called Mount Pleasant with a song that I enjoy, too, called Check on Your Friends.
Fathers and mothers, check on yourself, okay? We all got the downers and uppers, yeah, we all wander, but it's better if you stay. It can snow in the summer for sure, but when it's coming down real bad, baby, I got a coat. Struggling, I see it, I know. You can take the cape and the makeup off, let it pour. Check on your friends.
And the concept of checking on your friends is something I think is really important. I mean, I mentioned it before I started the podcast, really the chance to reach out to my friends, see how people are doing, get a chance to reconnect with them. I started towards like the end of the pandemic, and I've been going strong for 3 years now. So things are going really good. And last but not least, the Super Mario Brothers Galaxy movie trailer was just released. So really excited for that movie. I'll insert a little bit of an audio clip from the trailer here. But the sequel to the Super Mario Brothers movie scheduled for release in April of 2026. Here we go, a little bit of that trailer.
Hey, Luigi. What's up, Mario? Behold, I made a masterpiece for Princess Peach. What do you think?
Love the colors.
It's trash.
How dare you look at my masterpiece and say that?
I'll burn the skin off your bones.
Wow. Sorry about that. That's the old Bowser talking. Still working through my demons, I suppose. Anyway, I need my 8 hours or else I really turn into a monster.
Bowser Jr., and I'm gonna be taking my father now.
Yeah, really excited to go see that movie with my kids and Allison. I think it's gonna be really fun. Really excited to eventually get to see Yoshi in the movie. Again, Yoshi didn't make his way into the trailer, but again, if you caught the post-credit scene for the first Super Mario Brothers movie, you know they're absolutely setting up for Yoshi to make his debut and on film. So excited for that. Okay, well, that's enough of me rambling. Again, I wanted to bring up these entertainment stories because they're all really interesting and fun for me. And let's go ahead and take a quick break. And then when I come back, we're going to dive into some GoldenEye talk.
Reflections on the water, more than darkness in the depths. See him surface and never a shadow.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. I'm excited for this week. This is going to be really cool and awesome to do three movies in the same week that share very little in common, but all are celebrating noteworthy anniversaries. So first up on the docket, it's GoldenEye, the very first Pierce Brosnan movie of Pierce Brosnan taking on the role of James Bond. First released on November 17th of 1995, so it's celebrating its 30th anniversary. Lots of cool things with this movie. It's actually, I think it's the best Pierce Brosnan Bond movie, which may not be saying much because maybe the other ones weren't really that good. Die Another Day is kind of crappy. The one that had the really crappy Madonna auto-tune piece of garbage song. but anyways, yeah, so I want to give a little background on James Bond, like family history with the character before I dive into the movie itself. So for those who listen to the podcast regularly, you might remember I've talked about my dad many times and the influence that he's had on me. Whereas my dad isn't necessarily super big on, like, you know, sci-fi fantasy like I enjoy. So not really big on Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, Marvel superheroes, things like that. But my dad loves the character of James Bond. So obviously he loves classic cinema. So, you know, like Hollywood heavyweights like Sean Connery, people, when he does movies like that, I think my dad would always want to check out those type of movies. Very iconic character from the 60s and to the 70s. And I can remember my dad watching the movie Moonraker, and I had no idea what it was about. You know, it's the space themed Bond movie with Roger Moore, where they wanted to capitalize on the success of the first Star Wars movie. So I think in the late 70s, like in 78, or maybe 79. So shortly after the first Star Wars movie came out in 77, they did a Bond movie where Bond goes into space. And by today's standards, I guess that's kind of maybe considered like jumping the shark or nuking the fridge, like just kind of overkill. But as a kid, I remember walking in, watching my dad watch that movie, and this the scene when the good guys and the bad guys are in a space station having a laser battle floating in the air and thinking, oh my gosh, this is so cool. What is this? having no idea who the James Bond character was. So I got into it a little bit through my dad, but again, didn't really watch the movies because maybe I was a little too young at the time. There was a James Bond cartoon show called James Bond Jr., which kind of like took homage from the movies, where it was James Bond's nephew, who was kind of like a spy, who was like a womanizing spy, but it was a kid's cartoon. So obviously it didn't go to like too much inappropriate material, but... Then, of course, in the late 90s, there was the amazing, awesome Nintendo 64 game GoldenEye 007, which, again, everybody played to death. Like with my buddies from Temple City, you know, Nick, Derek, and David, Brett Mosas, Danny, everyone we knew from Temple City. We'd gather together to do like the four-man death matches. The multiplayer with GoldenEye, it was so incredible, so much fun to play that. And so that kind of gave us an introduction to the character itself. So I want to say I probably got into like maybe like my 20s when I really started going down, sitting down and watching all the James Bond movies. And GoldenEye seemed like a great fit to cover here on the show because, as I mentioned, I think it's actually the best James Bond movie from Pierce Brosnan. Not my favorite movie in total from the franchise, but definitely the best one that Pierce Brosnan ever did. So let's go ahead and dive into this movie. I do want to read a little bit of an excerpt from Wikipedia, kind of talking about where we are when this movie actually came out back in 1995. So from Wikipedia, we read, although GoldenEye was released only 6 years after License to Kill, world politics had changed dramatically in the interim. It was the first James Bond movie to be produced after the fall of the Berlin Wall, the collapse of the Soviet Union, and the end of the Cold War. And there was doubt over the character's relevance in the modern world. Some in the film industry felt it would be futile for the Bond series to make a comeback and that the character was best left as an icon of the past. Yeah, so introducing James Bond to the modern 90s audience would be very interesting because, again, the perception, according to what we just read in that clip from Wikipedia, was that the Bond character may no longer be relevant. It was kind of more like a character of the time era. So, like, you know, the 60s going into the 70s. And then into the early part of the 80s before the Berlin Wall would fall. And I guess world politics would change. And again, we see in this movie, I think it takes advantage of that, like the fact that we have good guy Russians and bad guy Russians in this movie. So it's actually kind of interesting. But again, the Bond character was so cool, so awesome. It definitely resonated with the audience at the time. And Bond's been a fixture of popular culture for many decades. It hasn't gone stale yet. Yet, I say yet, even though there have been some bad Bond movies in the past. But yeah, so let's go ahead and dive into this. This is Pierce Brosnan's very first James Bond adventure and features a really, really great cast. So let's dive into the very first scene with James infiltrating a Soviet base with his buddy Alec, who's played by Sean Bean, who, again, before the Lord of the Rings movies, I didn't really know who Sean Bean was, but we're going to dive into more about Sean Bean and his infamous deaths in movies as we go on to this podcast. So let's go ahead and dive into this very first scene of the movie where they're infiltrating a Soviet base.
Whoever's daughter. Could you bash?
I'm alone. Aren't we all? You're late, 007.
I had to stop in the bathroom.
Ready to save the world again?
After you, 006.
James? For England.
For England, Alec.
Closing time, James. Last call.
Buy me a pint.
Oh,
Shut the door, Alec! There's a draft! Alec!
Move out. Throw down your weapon and walk towards me. Slowly.
Finish the job, James! Blow them all to hell!
You'll have 10 seconds. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2.
For England, James!
On your fire!
Yeah, it's an interesting turn of events that occur in like the very beginning of the movie that, again, you can't see it, you can hear, but I mean, I'll just paint the picture so you guys can understand what's going on. So James and Alec, who's 006, are infiltrated Soviet base. Alec is captured by the Soviets and is killed. It's apparently shot. Spoilers, I mean, he doesn't die in this particular scene, even though we're led to believe that he did. And then Bond makes his escape, driving a motorcycle off a cliff to fly into a biplane. I know it's very ridiculous, but get used to it because Bond stunts are really ridiculous and awesome at the same time. But yeah, it could be like a very shocking surprise that would proceed to be a major character is dying so close at the beginning of the movie. But as it turns out, he is not dead. He is not killed by that Soviet operative, government operative, Orumbom, if I have his name right. But it is a very interesting way to begin the movie. And then later we see Bond meets the henchwoman, Zina Anatop. Very, very interesting name. Very clever how the Bond writers would name some of their villains. So Zina Anatop, played by Famke Hansen or Jansen. I always thought it was Jansen. I think it's Hansen. I think she's Danish, right? We know her best for playing Jean Grey in the X-Men movies. But they have a really memorable scene when they first meet. So let's go ahead and dive into this scene where Bond also drops the iconic line of Bond, James Bond.
Madame stands with 5. 6. Madame loses.
The arch. Enjoy it while it lasts.
The very words I live by.
17 words.
And what words do you live by?
The trick is to quit while you're still ahead.
That's one trick I've never learned. Perhaps you'll show me how it's done. Vodka martini. Shaken, not stirred. And for you?
The same.
How do you take it?
Straight up. With a twist. Thank you, Mr.
The name's Bond. James Bond.
Xenia Sergeyevna Onatop.
Onatop?
On the top.
Your accent, Georgian?
Very good, Mr. Bond. You've been to Russia?
Not recently. I used to drop in occasionally. Shoot in and out.
It's very different now. A land of opportunity.
With a new Ferrari in every garage?
No, not quite. That belongs to a friend.
A tip for your friend. The French registration plates for this year's model start with the letter L. Even the counterfeit ones.
Oh, and what rank do you hold with the motor vehicles department, Mr. Bond?
Commander.
Should we go?
This one is an admiral.
I like a woman who enjoys pulling rank.
Nice to meet you, Mr. Bond.
The pleasure, I'm sure, was all mine.
Yeah, really awesome, great scene. I mean, those casino scenes with Bond playing cards are always really cool and fun, especially when he drops the iconic line of the first shaken, not stirred for his martini. And then, of course, Bond, James Bond. And then Bond suspects Anatop of foul play. She's able to escape from him and finds a Russian admiral who I guess she had been flirting with in order to steal like some vital information from him. So while they're engaging in sex, she goes from on a top to on a bottom so she can wrap her legs around him and crush him to death with her thunder thighs. It's a really awesome scene. Again, I won't put it here into the podcast to keep it family friendly. But yeah, she's a very compelling, very interesting villain, you know, kind of like the Black Widow, like Spider, or like the Praying Mantis, right? Like those who prey on the men, the evil women, and just kind of, she's kind of scary and sexy at the same time. and she was a playable character in the GoldenEye game, which was pretty cool. The game featured a lot of iconic Bond villains like Oddjob and Jaws. Then, of course, Alec 006 and then Onatopp are all playable characters in the GoldenEye game during the four player death matches. So let's go ahead and move on with this scene. With the movie rather. Now we're going to move into this scene. This is where Onatopp is teaming up with the Admiral Yurumvum, the Soviet Admiral, who are visiting a facility where Russian scientists are coming up with or are developing the programming for the GoldenEye weapon. So let's go into this scene where they go to the facility under the pretense of being there for an inspection, kill all the scientists there. And Onatopp just gets off doing it. Let's go ahead and dive into the scene.
General Arkady Grigorovich Orumov, head of Space Division.
General, if I'd known...
You'd have been ready. This is an unscheduled test of the Severnaya facility, Major. War simulation. We're going to test fire GoldenEye. Report your status.
Two operational satellites, sir. Petya and the Misha, both in 90-minute Earth orbit at 100 kilometers.
Good. Here's the authorization code. Now, the GoldenEye and today's access numbers for satellite Petya, please. I am timing you.
Yeah, so we're given like a brief introduction to the GoldenEye weapon. And then, of course, these evil Soviets go and steal the weapon, kill all the scientists. The Bond girl is Natalia, who's one of the computer programmers, who's a Russian computer programmer, who was able to escape and avoid getting killed when Onatopp was shooting everybody. So then we move on to the next scene where Bond returns to MI6. And, you know, it's really cool. We get kind of more that classic vibe and feel of like 60s era Sean Connery Bonds, where Bond is flirting with Moneypenny. And we get to meet the rest of the MI6 crew. So let's go ahead and dive into this scene.
Good evening, Moneypenny.
Good evening, James. And we'll meet you in the Situation Room. I'm to take you straight in.
I've never seen you after hours, Moneypenny. Lovely.
Thank you, James.
Out on some kind of professional assignment, dressing to kill?
You'll find this crushing, 007. When I don't sit at home every night praying for some international incident so I can run down here all dressed up to impress James Bond. I was on a date, if you must know, with a gentleman. We went to the theater together.
Boring.
Sorry, I just had to throw it in there when I was watching this movie, thinking like, okay, Moneypenny's explaining that, oh, I went on a date to the theater with a gentleman. And in my mind, I'm thinking, how boring is that? Sorry, let's keep on with this scene.
Moneypenny, I'm devastated. What would I ever do without you?
As far as I can remember, James, you've never had me.
Hope springs eternal.
You know, this sort of behavior could qualify as sexual harassment.
Really? What's the penalty for that?
Someday you have to make good on your innuendos.
After you, Moneypenny.
No, I insist. You first.
Good evening, 007.
Tanner.
Up. 16 minutes ago, we intercepted a distress call from a supposedly abandoned radar station at Severnaya. Look what the satellite picked up. We found a match. Your missing tiger.
In the middle of northern Russia.
Seems your hunch was right, 007. It's too bad the evil queen of numbers wouldn't let you play it.
You were saying?
No, I was just...
Good. Because if I want sarcasm, Mr. Tanner, I'll talk to my children. Thank you very much. Good evening, 007.
Good evening,
Prime Minister's waiting for an update. Proceed with your briefing, Mr. Tanner.
Thank you. Yes, after the distress signal, your helicopter took off. And the Russians scrambled these three MiGs here to intercept it.
What do you think the Russians are using the base for?
Well, at one point, we suspected Severnaya might be the ground station for a secret space-based weapons program called GoldenEye, but...
Our statistical analysis saw they had neither the finance nor technology to implement it.
Numbers were never my strong suit. Are these pictures live?
Unlike the American government, we prefer not to get our bad news from CNN.
What the bloody hell was that? Thanks. Our satellite is knocked out. So are two of the Americans. We have another coming into range now. Good God. Two of the MiGs are down.
And it looks like the third went into the dish. What do you think?
No lights. Not one single electric light on a 30-mile radius. EMP.
It would account for the MiGs and the satellites.
And the blackout.
Electromagnetic pulse, a first-strike satellite weapon developed by the...
The Americans and Soviets during the Cold War. I've read the brief. Discovered after Hiroshima. Set off a nuclear device in the upper atmosphere. Creates a pulse, a radiation surge that destroys everything with an electronic circuit.
The idea being to knock out the enemy's communications before he, she, or they could retaliate.
So... GoldenEye exists.
Yes.
Could this be an accident?
No. The helicopter. If you wanted to steal the GoldenEye, it was the perfect getaway vehicle. Setting off the blast was the ideal way to wipe out any trace of the crime.
The Yanis group?
It may have been involved with the helicopter. I know the Russian failsafe systems. You just don't walk in and ask for the keys to the bomb. You need the access codes. There had to be an insider.
Yeah, so this is an important scene of the movie. We get to meet the new M, played by Dame Judi Dench, you know, very prestigious British actress, who holds her own. I mean, I think she does a fantastic job being like the boss of MI6. And then, of course, we get to learn more of what the GoldenEye weapon does. You know, it's a satellite that can shoot out a laser ray beam that can EMP to shut off all electronics to basically just cause havoc, and very devastating weapon that could be used in the wrong hands. So it's very interesting to kind of explain. We get the explanation of what the GoldenEye weapon is and then what the threat it poses to the world in general. Now we get to a really awesome, great scene, too. This is James Bond having a conversation with Q, which, again, was always a major part of the classic James Bond movies, where Q would explain all the gadgets and weapons that Bond would have at his disposal for that particular movie. And then, of course, we have a notable English, I think he's English, right? European, for sure. Actor Desmond Llewellyn, I'm probably butchering his name, I'm sorry, who played the role of Q for every single Bond movie up to this point. He went through all the Bonds. He went through Sean Connery, George Lazenby, the guy who only did Bond once, Roger Moore, Timothy Dalton, into the 90s. So, I mean, a very prestigious career. If he didn't die, he'd probably be still playing Q right now. Of course, he was really old. I mean, like, he was probably in his, like, late 80s, early 90s when he was taking on the role. And he was able to play Q for a few more Bond adventures after this movie. So let's go ahead and dive into this scene with Bond and Q talking about the gadgets for this movie.
Morning, Q. Sorry about the leg. Skiing?
Hunting.
Right, now pay attention, 007. First, your new car. BMW. Agile 5 forward gears, all points radar. Self-destruct system, and naturally, all the usual refinements. Now, this I'm particularly proud of. Behind the headlights, Stinger missiles.
Excellent. Just the thing for unwinding after a rough day at the office.
Need I remind you, 007, that you have a license to kill, not to break the traffic laws.
I wouldn't think of it.
Good. Right, let's get on to more practical matters. A typical leather belt. Male, size 34, buckle, notch. You finished?
Yes.
Good. A typical leather belt.
Q, I'm familiar with that device.
Not one with a 75-foot repelling cord built into the buckle. Fire, and out shoots a piton, followed by a high tensile wire designed to support your weight.
I see. And what if I need additional support?
It's tested for one, 007. Flight 878 to St. Petersburg. X-ray document scanner. A pen. This is a class 4 grenade. 3 clicks, arms the 4-second fuse, another 3 disarms it.
How long did you say the fuse was?
Oh, grow up, 007.
They all said the pen was mightier than the sword.
Thanks to me, they were right. Look, let's ask Fred here to demonstrate for us. Here we are. Sorry about this, Fred. 1, 2, 3. Don't say it.
The writing's on the wall?
Along with the rest of it. Now, 007, do please try and return some... Do please try and return some of this equipment in pristine order. Don't touch that. It's my lunch.
So moving on with the story, we get to meet several of Bond's contacts who are helping him off in this spy adventure, including, I don't have the character's name here in my notes, but played by Robbie Coltrane, who's most famous for playing Hagrid in the Harry Potter movies. Very unrecognizable when you look at him, but then if you look right into his face, because he doesn't have his beard in this movie, in GoldenEye, but if you look right into his eyes, you can tell, oh, yeah, that's for sure Hagrid from Harry Potter. Well, anyway, so he explains, Bond sets up the proposition. Hey, we got to meet this guy, Janice, who they believe is the one who's responsible for the theft of the GoldenEye weapon. And Robbie Coltrane, so Hagrid, I'll just call him Hagrid, is explaining who the Cossacks are and how he's able to arrange a meeting for him, for Bond to move forward and try and find the people responsible for stealing the GoldenEye weapon. So let's go ahead and watch this scene, which is actually a very important, vital, important scene to the movie, where he explains who the Cossacks are.
So, Mr. Bond, what is it that brings you to my neighborhood? Still working for MI6, or have you decided to join the 21st century? I hear the new M is a lady.
I want you to do me a favor.
He wants me to do him a favor. My knee aches every single day. Twice as bad when it is cold. You any idea how long the winter lasts in this country? Tell him, Dimitri.
Well, it depends.
Silence!
For an ex-KGB agent, you surprise me, Valentin. I'm sure someone of your stature must have realized the skill was not to hit your knee, but to miss the rest of you.
So why did you not kill me?
Call it
professional courtesy.
And I should extend you the same courtesy.
Kiros Funeral Parlor, 4 o'clock this afternoon. £200 of C4 explosives hidden in a casket. Your man drives the hearse in. The money's exchanged. Their man drives the hearse out. Their man will be arrested with the explosives. Your man will make a miraculous escape with the money. Your money.
And what do I owe for this accommodation?
I want you to set me up with Yanis.
What has he done to deserve you?
Stole a helicopter.
I have six.
Three. None that fly.
Who's counting?
These are not just criminals, Valentin. They're traitors. They used the chopper to steal a nuclear weapon. Killed a lot of innocent Russians doing it.
What do you expect from a Cossack?
Who?
It's Yanis. I never met the man, but I know he's Ilyen's Cossack.
Group that worked for the Nazis against the Russians. Second World War.
You know your history, Mr. Bond. At the end of the war, the Lienz Cossacks surrendered to the British in Austria, believing they would join your government and wage war against the communists. But the British betrayed them, sent them back to Stalin, who promptly had them all shot. Women, children, families.
Not exactly our finest hour.
Still, ruthless people. They got what they deserved.
I want you to set me up with Yanis. Tell him I'm asking about the chopper. You're going to meet me tonight at the Grand Hotel Europe.
And then you and I are even, and he owes me one.
Precisely.
So it's very important to note that there are a group of people who feel like the English British government had betrayed them and are probably going to be seeking revenge, according to what Hagrid explains to Bond, which is an important plot point as we getting into the big reveal, the big plot twist of this movie. So anyways, Bond, through his meetup that Hagrid set up for him, he's able to encounter Onatopp in a sauna. And the scene may be a little inappropriate. Onatopp tries to kill Bond. I won't play the audio here because without video, it could be maybe perceived as being a little inappropriate. But we get the iconic line from James Bond right here in this movie.
No, no, no. No more foreplay.
And then Onatopp takes Bond to meet the man who's responsible for all of this. And it's the big reveal that Sean Bean's character, Alec, is in fact alive and well. So let's go ahead and dive into this particular scene here.
Hello, James.
Alec, back from the dead. No longer just an anonymous star on the memorial wall at MI6. What's the matter, James? No glib remark? No pithy comeback?
Why?
Hilarious question. Particularly from you. Did you ever ask why? Why we toppled all those dictators, undermined all those regimes? Only to come home. Well done, good job, but sorry, old boy. Everything you risked your life and limb for has changed.
It was the job we were chosen for.
Of course you'd say that. James Bond, the Majesty's loyal terrier, defender of the so-called faith. Oh, please, James, put it away.
It's insulting to think I haven't anticipated your every move. Yes. I trusted you, Alec.
Trust? What a quaint idea.
How did the MI6 screening miss that your parents were Lian's Cossacks?
Once again, your faith is misplaced. They knew. We're both orphans, James. But where your parents had the luxury of dying in a climbing accident, mine survived the British betrayal and Stalin's execution squads. But my father couldn't let himself or my mother live with the shame of it.
MI6 figured I was too young to remember. And in one of life's little ironies, the son went to work for the government whose betrayal caused the father to kill himself and his wife.
Hence, Janus. The two-faced Roman god come to life.
It wasn't God who gave me this face. It was you, setting the timers for 3 minutes instead of six.
Am I supposed to feel sorry for you?
No. You're supposed to die for me. By the way, I did think of asking you to join my little scheme, but somehow I knew 007's loyalty was always to the mission, never to his friend. Closing time, James. Last call.
So I would be interested to learn from my listeners, if you watched Bond, this particular Bond movie for the first time, did you predict that would happen, that it turned out that Alec was a traitor and that he actually was still alive? I guess if you think about it, maybe it was kind of predictable, but I remember watching this movie for the first time, probably, again, not in the 90s when it first came out, probably in the early 2000s when I got even more interested in the Bond character, thinking that it was a pretty cool plot twist. But anyways, so Bond is captured, as was Natalia, the computer programmer who escaped the facility getting destroyed and escaped getting killed by Onatopp, and they're kidnapped together, but they escape from a helicopter that was actually going to be blown up, that they were trapped inside of. So they go together to try and meet up with the good guy Russian government agents, but then of course they get kidnapped yet again. This time Natalia is kidnapped and Bond has to chase after her, and we get to a really awesome cool scene of the movie where Bond is driving a tank. It's a really awesome cool Bond moment. So let's go ahead and dive into this scene. Yeah, so I know for a podcast, I can't really do it justice. But again, that moment, if you're watching it, is actually really cool. So we get a really outlandish stunt with James Bond driving a tank through the streets of Russia, busting through a wall. And at the same time, the iconic James Bond theme is playing. Like, so when you play Bond video games, like if you do pull off a really outlandish like type of stunt, you can earn an achievement, which would be called a Bond moment. So it could be just a really awesome action sequence that you accomplish or do. And it's so cool. The James Bond film franchise is just full of really awesome, cool Bond moments. Even though I will admit, I mean, it is very impractical to think that an armored tank can drive as fast as it does in the streets of Russia, like driving like it's a four-door sedan car. But, you know, it's Hollywood. The important thing is we just get a really cool action sequence and throw logic to the wind, basically. Well, anyway, so Bond is able to rescue Natalia. The villains escape yet again. And Natalia is able to hack into the system of her former coworker, who turned out to be the mole, like the double agent who was helping the evil admiral and Onatopp, and now of course Alec, steal the GoldenEye weapon. This particular co-worker of hers, like a fellow computer programmer, is played by Alan Cumming. So it's kind of cool. Alan Cumming, Nightcrawler from the X-Men movies, was actually in a movie together with Jean Grey, even though I think they only share one scene. I don't think they have any dialogue together, but it was kind of cool to see them together just very briefly in this movie. So Natalia is able to deduce where Alec is going to be hiding, so they go together, Bond and Natalia, to go and stop them from using the GoldenEye weapon. And in the process of doing so, they land in the jungle area, and of course they are confronted by Onatopp, who has one of the coolest death scenes in the movie. So let's go ahead and dive into this here.
pleasure will be all mine. Wait for your turn.
Did enjoy a good squeeze.
So what happens in this scene is that Anna Top is lowered from a helicopter. She's attached with a cable so she can land safely. She's attacking Bond. She beats up Natalia. She has Bond trapped in her leg wrapping, like break your spine, kill you maneuver. And then at that very moment, when she's distracted, Bond is able to grab his gun, shoot the helicopter blades. So the helicopter spins out of control. The cable is still attached to Anna Top, and then she's pulled, crashes into a tree, and like is kind of crushed herself and dies. And of course, Bond has that very clever clip at the quip, or very cheesy clip, like quip, I guess you want it, whatever you want to call it, at the end, saying, "Oh, she always did enjoy a good squeeze." You know, it's so funny, like the Austin Powers movies were meant to be like, you know, parodies and pay homage, but kind of in a humorous way towards the James Bond movie. So there's the scene from the first Austin Powers movies when Dr. Evil's ill-tempered sea bass bites off the head of a henchman, and then Austin Powers just makes all those quips about losing your head.
Not a good time to lose one's head.
Indeed.
That's not the way to get ahead in life.
No.
It's a shame he wasn't more headstrong. Mm. He'll never be the head of a major corporation.
Okay, that'll do.
Okay.
In fact, it's my understanding that the Daniel Craig Bond movies actually went to a more serious tone because of Austin Powers poking fun at James Bond. So that's why you don't hear Daniel Craig like making quips about the way people die and having kind of silly, weird, unusual names for their henchmen. Well, let's go ahead and move on with the movie now. So now they make it to the facility. They're kidnapped again, and Alec has Bond and Natalia in custody. And then, of course, he gives her gives Bond and Natalia his evil, like super villain like type explanation of the plot as to what he hopes to accomplish for all his scheming. Again, like maybe it's very cliche to do that, but it's so important for the plot of movies, and it's so memorable and cool. I love it. I think it's actually really cool, even though it maybe doesn't seem practical that the villain would reveal their whole plot to the hero. But of course, for us, the audience, we kind of have to have that scene in these movies. So let's go ahead and dive into the scene now.
Interesting setup, Alec. You break into the Bank of England via computer, then transfer the money electronically, just seconds before you set off the golden eye, which erases any record of the transactions. Ingenious.
Thank you, James.
But it still boils down to petty theft. In the end, you're just a bank robber. Nothing more than a common thief.
You always did have a small mind, James. It's not just erasing bank records. It's everything on every computer in Greater London. Tax records, stock market, credit ratings, land registries, criminal records. In 16 minutes and 43 seconds, in 42 seconds, the United Kingdom will re-enter the Stone Age.
A worldwide financial meltdown. And also, mad little Ali can settle a score with the world 50 years on.
Oh, please, James, spare me the Freud. I might as well ask you if all the vodka martinis ever silenced the screams of all the men you've killed. Yeah. Or if you find forgiveness in the arms of all those willing women for all the dead ones you failed to protect. England is about to learn the cost of betrayal. Inflation adjusted for 1945. Welcome to the party, my dear.
Natalia!
Okay, so after that explanation, Natalia sees Boris. Boris was the name of Alan Cumming's character. So she sees him, beats him up because he's kind of a little wimpy dude. And during the whole little scuffle there, Boris actually picks up the bomb pen that Q had given Bond on accident, not realizing that the pen is actually a bomb. So when he sets it off, Natalia and Bond are able to make their escape. And then we have the final confrontation between Alec and Bond. Really awesome fight sequence. So again, unfortunately, I can't show it to you here on the podcast, but take my word for it. Go ahead and rewatch this movie and see that final fight battle between Pierce Brosnan and Sean Bean. It's a really cool, really exciting scene. And then, of course, we get to the final finality when they're fighting on top of the satellite that controls the GoldenEye weapon. And then, of course, at that moment, when Bond is able to defeat Alec, he lets him fall to his death. So let's go ahead and finish off the movie here.
For England, James?
No. For me.
So there we go. We get a really exciting fight sequence and then a memorable death scene by Alec, Sean Bean's character. And this time he's dead. and you know what? So it had me thinking, you know, because, I mean, Sean Bean has the reputation of dying in all of his projects. I mean, particularly violent deaths. I mean, the perception is that he's died more times than any other actor in Hollywood. So I wanted to do a little research about that. And in fact, I kind of knew some of this information, but it turns out he actually is not the most frequently killed off character in Hollywood. In fact, to be honest, his Lord of the Rings co-star of Christopher Lee has died the most in movies. So I want to go ahead and present this statistics here for the amount of deaths a number of Hollywood actors have participated in or contributed to film. As it turns out, on this list that I gathered from the entertainment website Collider, no actress is on the list. It's all men. Who have they compiled the list of the 25 most frequently killed actors in Hollywood. And let's go ahead and dive into this list here. So on this list compiled by the entertainment website Collider of the top 25 most killed actors in Hollywood movies, Sean Bean actually ranks in at number 16. He only has 25 screen deaths. Of course, his screen deaths have all been like very memorable. Like, I mean, again, one of the most iconic and recognizable has to be Fellowship of the Ring when Boromir is killed. And then, of course, he dies in this one. He's the villain in Jack Ryan movie, one of the two Jack Ryan movies that Harrison Ford did, Patriot Games. He's killed violently in that movie too. So I can kind of see how sometimes the perception is that Sean Bean is killed the most frequently, but technically there are actors who have been killed more times than he has. So I won't go over the whole top 25 list, but let's go ahead and go over the top 10 really fast. So let's go ahead and skip down to number 10. On this list from Collider, number 10 most frequently killed Hollywood actor is Mark Hamill, of all people. I didn't know that. Mark Hamill has had 30 on-screen deaths. And I guess maybe no need to mention The Last Jedi because that movie sucked. But I mean, technically, I guess he does die in that one. But let's go ahead and move on to number 9. Number 9 is Bela Lugosi, the famous Dracula actor from like the early part of the 20th century. He's had 36 on-screen deaths. Number 8 is Eric Roberts, the brother of Julia Roberts. Famously was the villain in one of the mob bosses in The Dark Knight, dies in that one. Then, of course, was the villain in The Expendables. And I'm going to be talking about Sylvester Stallone later this week here on the podcast. So it's kind of timely that he was number 8. Number 7 is Lance Henriksen. who's in, you know, the Terminator, Alien. You know, he's been in several James Cameron movies. Alien 3, I should say, not Alien, the first Alien, but Alien 1 and then Alien 3. No, I apologize. I'm getting my Alien movies mixed up. Aliens, the sequel, he's in that one as an android and then actually dies in Alien 3. Sorry, spoilers. This whole episode's spoilers, spoiler filled. Next up on the list, Danny Trejo, 41 screen deaths. And that's actually kind of an interesting asterisk that I guess you can include, because if you also include TV shows and video game voiceover work, things of that nature, I believe Danny Trejo would actually rank higher than Christopher Lee. I think he would be number two on the list, but let's keep going now. Number five is Boris Karloff. I'm not sure who that is. Apparently he was in movies like Frankenstein, The Mummy, The Invisible Ray. Okay. Then next up on the list is John Hurt at number four, who has probably the most iconic death scene in all of cinema, the chestbuster scene from the first Alien movie. I mean, even if you've never seen Alien before, you absolutely are familiar with that scene of an alien jumping through your chest. Give me the heebie-jeebies just thinking about it. But number three, it was Vincent Price. And spoilers, I'm actually going to be discussing Vincent Price later on the podcast. If Vincent Price dies in Edward Scissorhands, and actually, spoilers, I'm planning to discuss the Edward Scissorhands movie, and fingers crossed, and I'm hoping Allison will join me for that. I'm pretty sure she'll want to, but yeah, so we'll definitely be talking about that a little bit more here on the podcast in just a few more weeks, but number two on the list is Dennis Hopper, who's in the Super Mario Brothers movie. I guess he plays Bowser in the Super Mario Brothers movie, the really bad live-action one, not the animated one that came out a few years ago. And then, of course, number one on the list is Christopher Lee with 70 on-screen deaths. And actually, I apologize to complete the list. Dennis Hopper has 48. And then Vincent Price had 48 as well. They were tied at 48. So really cool list and very interesting to think about that. Actually, for completionists, please, people who wish to know, voice actor for Megatron and many other voices in cinema, cartoons, TV, movies, Frank Welker has the most on-screen deaths at 111 deaths, if you count video games and voiceover work and TV and things like that. But to keep it simple, if you're only going strictly movies, and yeah, Christopher Lee has the record at 70 on-screen deaths. So there we go. That's a James Bond GoldenEye. Again, the best Pierce Brosnan Bond movie. A really cool Bond theme too, performed by Tina Turner. I personally would pick View to a Kill by Duran Duran as my all-time favorite Bond theme, followed by You Know My Name by Chris Cornell, which was the Bond theme for the Casino Royale, the first Daniel Craig Bond. But I found this movie to be really enjoyable and cool. It'd been a while since I'd seen it last. And I think this is the best Pierce Brosnan Bond movie. So I definitely would recommend checking this out if you're going to watch a Pierce Brosnan movie and celebrate its 30th anniversary. So yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed this trip down memory lane, reflecting back on this particular Bond movie. To do an episode talking about the Bond video game, the GoldenEye video game, would be really cool too. So that might be something I might consider for the future. But yeah, thank you for my listener. Thank you for indulging me. And I hope you found this episode to be entertaining. And you're going to be entertained in the next couple days when I do Rocky IV. And then shortly after that, the Ewok Adventure, The Battle for Endor. So thank you again for listening to the Casting for Fun podcast. We'll catch you again very soon here on the show.
Enjoy it while it lasts.
The very words I live by.